A couple with a shared love of conservation has devoted the last 7 years to protecting the banded dotterel living on the shores of Kaikoura. The birds nest on the sand, making them particularly vulnerable to predators, especially cats, as well as tide and storm surges, and disturbance from people who can't spot the well-camouflaged birds. Dotterels, or tūtiri whātū, are critically endangered, with numbers estimated to be around 19,000 nationally. Ailsa McGilvery Howard and her husband Ted Howard spend their time monitoring the nests and eggs, trapping predators, and much more. They are also researching and tracking flight paths, advocating for cat containment, on and on. For their conservation work, the pair were honoured with a Queen's Service Medal last year, and they are with us now. Welcome to 9 to Noon. Lovely to talk.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Catherine. Lovely to be here.
Now, tell us where you live, first of all, in this beautiful part of Te Waipanamu, the South Island. Are you right close to the beach?
We're actually lucky to be on top of the peninsula, so we can see the sea on both sides, and we have these beautiful mountains, but it really does take some doing to live in Kaikoura without a view, and it's, you know, such a beautiful place for the soul.
Now, you've got to describe these birds for those who haven't got the chance to look them up on the website at the moment. They're striking, aren't they? Striking colour scheme, cute, pert little face. How do you describe them?
When they're in breeding plumage, they're particularly striking. The males are very colourful. They're bands. And, yeah, they're a very small bird. They're about the same size as a blackbird, but slightly plumper.
Like this
arrow. Yeah. But, yeah, they're amazing little critters. They can be incredibly trusting. I've got one bird that I was present when it hatched that will let me get up to within a meter of it before it will move off its nest. Although, like for anybody else, it takes off when they're 10 meters away, but she's very trusting of me. Yeah. So they all have their own individual personalities.
And how many there are? So I might just get you just to lean a little closer to the mic. I know you're sharing. How many are you keeping an eye on there?
Well, we started in a really small way. So I had heard a rumour that there were dotterels nesting at the racecourse, and my assumption was that that was the only place. So I might have followed, say, 20 pairs or so. But, of course, as I started to study, people gave me information that dotterels were more abundant than I thought, or at least in more places. So last year we covered probably 6-8 kilometres of beach.
Goodness.
And we still haven't done the hair count. But we did cover 118 nests and their outcome within that study in the last year.
That's much better mic work. Thank you very much for doing that. I really appreciate it. So what are you doing to help them? We've mentioned the threats to them. What are you able to do to help them out?
There's a few things. It's like what our study has shown us is they're vulnerable. Their vulnerabilities. So one of the things that we can actually do, the thing that would make one of the greatest difference, is advocacy, because a project like this, nobody can do it alone. So we talk a lot to people about the things that make a difference. So that's removing disturbance, being respectful of the area they're in, and particularly considering night containment for their pets makes a real difference.
That's delicate, isn't it? Oh, sorry to cut you off. It's delicate, isn't it? Because you want to get people to a place where they love these birds as much as you do, and they don't feel like it's an imposition on them or on their pet, but it really is one of the single most important things they can do. How have you gone about trying to build that support?
Well, there's a couple of things from my perspective. Like, some of the things we can do directly is that we can mark out the nests and make them easier for people to avoid. We can do trapping programs, which we're doing. So that's for things like hedgehogs, rats, stoats, weasels, feral cats. But, yeah, as Elsa said, getting people to contain their animals, their cats at night, and keeping their dogs under control when on the beach, it's really difficult for some people. And we're both cat lovers and dog lovers. So, getting that conversation underway, and we've started it locally and we're involved in the national conversation as well.
Just lean in again, Ailsa, sorry, just lean into where you were.
Catherine, it's a really difficult thing because part of being a Kiwi, we have a relationship with this extensive, beautiful coast. And that means like we picnic on the beach. And as technology has increased and people's ability to access remote locations, we see a lot of advertising in the area of vehicles on the beach. So we see, you know, if you look at four-wheel drive ads and all these sorts of things, you see these ads on the beach. So we're giving a message to people. The beach is yours. The beach is open. And we think about birds. It's kind of, it's a weird thing. But, because, you know, perhaps for our European culture, our first images we think of are birds and trees. And I know it was such a shock to me to see this little pudding on the beach having a nest. And the thing that lured me in was the enormous energy that the bird put into raising offspring. I was just completely taken by that. So because these birds are invisible and our culture is pushing the use of these wild spaces, this become, it's always a, what's the word, it's, there is a conflict between nature and what people wish to do and what people understand it as their rights to do.
You hit it on the head, and I know it's a challenge for the birds, but it's a challenge also for many shellfish with vehicles on the beach that are inhibiting their beds and disturbing their beds. But it's the challenge to not come at it from a "you mustn't." It's to come at it from a "here's why a gesture that you make is going to make this wild space so much more special." And that's a
getting that idea of responsibility. Like we must have our freedoms and we must enjoy them, but we, at the same time, freedom without responsibility is necessarily destructive. And just building that awareness of responsibility has to go along with freedom to make it work.
I mean, I'm very frightened by this, Kevin, because I think and a time of extreme stress when Ted was ill with cancer. And I see, I've learned about resilience and self-resourcefulness. And personally, I just see how much nature gives me in a sense of well-being. And I see people are drawn to Kaikoura to get a taste of that as well. So as human beings, having a wild coastline, an untamed wilderness, is something that it really contributes to us recognising that the world is something outside ourselves.
It was an incredible time in both of your lives, wasn't it? And it was literally, Ted, I think you'd had an awful diagnosis. You'd had the worst diagnosis. And it was,
I got told I could be dead in 6 weeks and had a 2% chance of making 2 years. And that was 12 years ago last week.
And he bought me a camera and the rest is history, obviously. I started to look at something and something you couldn't see, which I love the irony of that because I've had always had poor eyesight in my life. So it just makes me smile when I think about it. But I taking the time to watch, I just recognised that these things could not breed. And one of the difficult things about the study is how we talk about exponential loss. But how, you know, when a population starts to decline, but
it's going down like 3% a year, at some point it disappears.
It crashes
quite rapidly.
It's so shocking to see. Like, I remember us saying, oh gosh, our breeding rate of success was only, I don't know, we had 17 fledglings. And we're like, oh, this is incredibly grown. Last year, sorry, the following season, we had two fledglings, only two out of an enormous, I think it was over 50 nests or around about 50 nests. So now last year we hit, I think we probably, the last season we got six, but the previous season we got two. And of those two fledglings, we only would have had one, except I found what I thought was a dead egg that had been broken by a cat. You could see the cat damage, the prints, everything. And for some reason, I put it in my ear, and it was ice cold. And blow me down, it said, it made a noise and said, could you please put me back under my mother? And I thought, well, I've still got a chance. And it actually hit. So what we've seen is that it survived and fledged. So that year we had two out of, I think it was 126 eggs, and we often refer to it, oh, that was a miracle, and so we call it a miracle. He's a bit of a star. So within this, you can see that there's huge resilience within the population. So if we could support them, they could bounce back really fast.
Amazing. I've got to commend your photography as well. I'm looking at this cute little newly hatched chick sleeping after hatching. Wonderful photography. Do have a look at the images, listeners, please, and you'll see what it is that these two are working to preserve as best as possible. And look at these little, oh, these are quite a healthy, there's three eggs in this particular nest. I'm thinking of things like marine reserves, and I don't know if it can work on land. So you're now looking at six kilometres of beach, and that, as you say, is one of the stunning things about Kaikoura. It's very hard not to be looking at the beach on both sides of the, you know, sort of peninsula headland. Is there, could it work to have some areas that were vehicle-free or some areas that are more protected and everybody knowing about it and everybody respecting it? Or does it not work like that? Do the little birds just go wherever they want to go?
Well, I think we're lucky enough to have a hot spot, Catherine. So that means that what we could do is perhaps take the area of the most concentrated nest and protect that. We don't need to necessarily protect the species, but everywhere. But that in itself lifts the profile of the species.
Yeah, and like they're not colonial nests, they're territorial nests. So each pair will stake out a territory on the beach and defend it against other dotterels and any other bird that comes in. So they do tend to concentrate in areas, perversely, the same areas that people do for exactly the same reasons. They come to the areas of high productivity. We come here to catch fish. Birds come here to catch the things that the fish are feeding on. So, yeah, we're all here for the same reason, in a sense. It's good kind.
Are you getting are you getting cooperation, Ted, from the community? Because I'm thinking Kaikoura, of course, like so many places, took a heck of a hit with the with COVID and the, you know, standstill that tourism came to. You've also had the double whammy. You had the earthquakes, and I know that that impacted on some of your typical tourism attractions. You know, a lot of the wildlife has relocated. And I'm wondering if you can get the kind of cooperation to make this another reason people come to your beautiful township. If you could build some kind of a support around a protected area, or even just, you know, people agreeing to become aware of what these birds need if they are down on the beach, using the beach, fishing, kaimoana gathering. Do you think there's an appetite for that?
Well, there's an appetite in some parts of the community, and there are others who are more traditionally focused who, so there's a lot of conversations to be had, but I think it's workable in that we can, there are areas where it's grassed, where there are tracks that are above the sands and gravels, where people can drive their quad bikes and get access, providing they leave them high. Then they've only got to walk 100 metres down the beach to the water's edge. So it's a short walk, but rather than driving their quad bikes right down to the water's edge. So that would be workable here in Kaikoura, because we've got that extra margin here that it's no danger to the birds. But yeah, during their breeding season, we need those quad bikes off the beach, because one of the things the chicks do is once they hatch, when they're disturbed, they will run to a hole and hide in the hole, and the quad bike tracks are the nearest hole. So they tend to run to where the greatest danger is, because that's what they're genetically programmed to do. And they're just dying from death from a thousand cuts, basically. None of these threats looked at individually is a particularly high threat to them. But there's not just one, there's dozens. And all added together, they're a very big problem.
You need to get everyone on board. I know you already are, and just make it another amazing, you know, attraction to the place, and another reason people want to come. And most people want to do the right thing. ultimately, when they're helped to find a way, yeah?
Yep.
And you believe that we could do something.
Yeah.
We wouldn't even try. And I think the thing that it really motivates us. I mean, I didn't know anything about birding when I started, unlike you who probably did know a few things. But we have to protect birds when they start to decline. We can't wait until they're critically endangered.
Got it. Thank you both. Thank you both, and all the best. Lovely to talk, and thanks for the images too. Elsa McGilvery Howard and Ted Howard.